This is KCBX, Central Coast Public Radio, here on NPR One.
Wayne Craig, you are a board member of
Visit Lodi Conference and Tourist Bureau.
I know you from back in the old days, and it seems like you're on a board of directors of a hospital here,
actually,
too, right?
Actually, I'm the CEO and president of the Lodi Memorial Hospital Foundation.
How long have you lived in Lodi?
Since 1969.
You were talking earlier about some of the cool things to do and see. As a destination, well, you know, we're over in the California coast, so it is a weekend getaway possibility, easy.
It is, and we find that Bay Area people love to come over here because we have a different climate, but we also have a different attitude. So there's obviously the wineries, many of, almost all of which now have tasting rooms. There's about 1,000 miles of waterways in the Delta. We have Lodi Lake that you can kayak and recreate on with 4 miles of wilderness trails with over 200 bird species on those trails. We have the San Joaquin Historical Museum, which has remarkable history of the valley.
That's right in town?
It's just outside of Lodi in what's called Mickey Grove Park.
My name is Philip Merlo, and I am the Director of Education at the San Joaquin Historical Museum.
Hi, my name is Christina Swanson. I'm the Executive Director of the San Joaquin County Historical Society and Museum.
So as you guys know, I lived in the San Joaquin Valley quite a long time ago, so I'm very familiar with this area, but many people are not. This really is the food basket of the world.
San Joaquin County was first heavily settled by Europeans in the late 1840s during the Gold Rush. People that having come to California for gold, realized that there was a lot of money to be made in agriculture and in trade. And so by the 1870s, you had massive wheat fields and grain fields that eventually evolved into a very large milling industry that was really spearheaded by Sperry Flour Mills. And the Sperry Flour Company was shipping wheat all across the Pacific world, the Philippines, Japan, across the United States, across California. And that produced a lot of wealth for this region. In the 1870s, as the California Delta was really reclaimed as a result of really lots of financial capital from San Francisco with a combination of a large Chinese workforce.
So they did dams and dikes and drainage.
Dikes, levees, etc. Yeah. They were able to really transition this area from wheat and grain into the world's largest producer of fruits and vegetables.
And that remains so today?
Remains so today, yes. We remain one of the largest producers of almonds, tomatoes, walnuts. We are California's largest producer of strawberries. We do produce lots of beans, corn, rice. Historically, we've been famous for asparagus, although that has really died down in the past 20 years.
Why is that?
So asparagus is a crop that in California is very seasonally dependent. And in California, it can only be grown at certain times of the year. Whereas in other places across the world, for example, in Mexico, in Asia, they can actually grow it year-round. And so it's very hard to compete with their year-round economy.
And that has you with temperature then, latitude?
Yes, temperature, latitude.
This also remains a huge producer of grapes. From table grapes on. Tell us about back in the day and today.
Sure, that is correct. Lodi, its claim to fame was the flame tokay, which was a table grape. It's delicious. And it was grown extensively throughout the northern end of this valley.
It was the number one table grape in America, right?
That's correct, and that's, again, what put Lodi on the map. That crop has now changed. The seedless grape really made a big difference in what consumers find attractive. Nobody wants to deal with seeds anymore. So there went flame tokay, and enter the seedless red flame. And then the climate here, again, wonderful for grapes. We turned it into wine grapes, which now Lodi is becoming famous more so every year for the amazing varietals of wine that are being produced.
And I think it's only been in recent years where the new breed of winemakers have turned Lodi into one of the top wine growing regions in the world.
It really is. I think that you can look at the Napa wines and see where their grapes are actually coming from, and a lot of them are coming from here. Same thing with going up into the gold country, up into Amador and El Dorado. I think a lot of the varietals, particularly the Rhone varietals that do so well in that country, are also they're finding are doing very well down here, and some really high quality wines are being produced.
Right now, we're in the countryside outside of Lodi, and we are at an incredible facility. talk to us about where we are at and what somebody could experience here?
Yeah, the San Joaquin County Historical Society and Museum. We are 18 beautiful acres in the middle of Mickey Grove Park. Mickey Grove is a regional park. It is part of the San Joaquin County system of parks. We are a nonprofit organization, and we maintain the county's collection. We have an amazing collection of artifacts, everything from the native peoples who are from here to the European settlers, and then on to all of these wonderful innovations in agriculture that we're sitting in the midst of right now.
But these are tactile, hands-on, real exhibits. We're out earlier, and there's a couple of the oldest house in the whole region, an incredible two-story home. Tell us about some of the objects and the homes that you towed in here.
We have several historic structures on site here. We have a schoolhouse from Calaveras County. We have the original Charles Weber House that sat at Weber Point in Stockton that was moved very painstakingly here to Mickey Grove Park.
Is that 1850s when it was built?
The cottage was built in 1849.
Okay.
And then we also have the house that Charles Weber built for his daughter, Julia, also on Weber Point in Stockton, which is here now, was moved here in 2001. It was built in 1878.
Yes.
And amazing work to get both of those structures here, amazing work for us to maintain them, and we're still in the process of renovating the Julia Weber house.
Well, and the building we're in right now, it has planters and harvesters, and some of them are olden time into fairly modern.
Yes, in the early 20th century, the agricultural economy here facilitated a lot of manufacturing. And so the first company in the world to produce harvesters and tractors, the Holt Manufacturing Company, was based here. And ever since that time period, there's been a culture of innovation that's helped to lead to new companies that are producing new types of harvesters, new types of combine tractors. And this particular building really takes you through the history of those different types of tractors through a timeline, and then lets you touch and look at and learn about the different types of things that they did.
This agricultural-based park is so big that I can't imagine that it's not also the site of the county fair. I mean, it's giant.
It actually looks like the site of a county fair. With the number of buildings that we have here, we absolutely recommend that people come here and spend the day. Bring a picnic. Unlike a lot of other museums, we encourage people to bring food in because we have, like I said, 18 acres. We have a beautiful nature trail that simulates what it would be like to come over the mountains through the redwoods and down into the delta. So it's not just a history museum. We really have a wonderful hands-on nature scene as well.
For further information, do you guys have a website?
We do. Please go to sanjoaquinhistory.org. And my name is Christina Swanson. I'm the executive director.
Yes, and you can find us on Facebook at the San Joaquin County Historical Museum and Society. Our page is very active. We respond quickly. And my name is Philip Merlo. I'm the Director of Education.
Thanks, guys.
It's a very large regional park that was donated by the Mickey family back in the day, and there's a small zoo there that's pretty amazing. It's a very tiny zoo, but we've had more golden lion tamarans born there than San Diego Zoo. And the same thing with pudus, which are the smallest deer in the world. So it's worth going to see. We have some other museums in town. We have the World of Wonders Children's Museum that used to be a joint venture with Exploratorium in San Francisco, but now is on its own. We have about 50,000 visitors a year that go through that. Downtown is lovely just to go be in. We have lots of restaurants. And then, of course, the gateway to Yosemite, to Lake Tahoe, to the Bay Area right here. So it's a great base camp.
How far to get up to Yosemite?
Yosemite is about, well, to the park itself is about 2 hours. It's another half an hour to get from the gate into the valley floor. Lake Tahoe is a little over 2 hours, 2.5 hours, depending whether you're going south or north shore. And then the Bay Area, downtown San Francisco, is an hour and 45 minutes away. It used to be an hour and 15. And the Delta is literally 5 minutes away. And so there's lots of boating and fishing and hunting in the Delta.
You could even base camp in Lodi for day tripping, exploring in the Sierras.
Well, as a Visit Lodi Tourism board member, we've witnessed that. I mean, we've had an explosion of Airbnbs. I would say that the vast majority of the people don't come here just to wine taste. They come for events, and they come just to be a tourist, and they spend 2 or 3 days here seeing all the amenities.
How far to get up to 49?
49 is literally 20 minutes away.
Oh, that's crazy.
Yeah.
And that's the iconic gold route, right?
Yeah, I was just up at the Ironstone Winery, which is a little bit over an hour from here. Ironstone Winery has the largest gold nugget in the world at 522 carats. They have a history museum as well as a 1,100 acre campus, just gorgeous. But then there's also Greenhorn Resort and Angels Camp. So there's lots to do in the foothills, and it's really the old 49ers. I mean, you go up there and you literally could find a gold nugget just walking around.
I love it.
Yeah.
So when you look up towards the Sierras from here, can you see the peaks from on a clear day?
Absolutely. Yeah, during the winter on the clear days, you can see the snow caps very clearly, and you can sometimes see snow on Mount Diablo, so we have it on both sides. We used to have a lot of valley fog. We haven't had that in the last 15 or 20 years. I think we are having a little climate change. Thank goodness we're not having that dangerous fog, but it's those beautiful winter days are remarkable, and of course snow skiing is just an hour and a half away.
And what's the nearest ski resort?
Probably the most popular one is Bear Valley, which is about an hour and a half away. And then, of course, you have some smaller ones, Dodge Ridge down further. Even some of the close ones at Lake Tahoe, like Boreo Ridge, is only 2 hours away.
So. Not bad. You're pretty spoiled here, you know that.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, that's why I'm not leaving.
Right, Wayne, thank you for sharing.
Thank you, Tom. Nice visit.
I'm Tom Wilmer, reporting from Lodi, California. We'll see you here.
You've been listening to the Lowell Thomas Award-winning travel show Journeys of Discovery with Tom Wilmer, a featured podcast on NPR.org's podcast directory. Produced by California Central Coast NPR affiliate KCBX. You are invited to subscribe to Journeys of Discovery with Tom Wilmer on NPR.org, NPR One, iTunes, Stitcher.com, and more than 20 other podcast channels around the world. Underwriting support for Journeys of Discovery with Tom Wilmer is provided by Nashville's Big Backyard, a nonprofit economic initiative focused on rural destinations along the fabled Natchez National Parkway. With a focus on rural communities, such as Leaper's Fork, not far from Nashville, the Big Backyard journey traverses through Tennessee's southwest quarter down into Alabama's legendary Shoals region, the mothership of American music. The featured rural community's common thread is historic architecture and a timeless, charming small-town atmosphere, some with a river running through it. The diverse attractions of the featured communities include the amazing Elephant Sanctuary in Hohenwald, where retired circus elephants come to retire in peace, and iconic destinations like Northern Alabama's Shoals region, where you'll find one of America's most iconic Frank Lloyd Wright homes and two of America's legendary recording studios that have been etching American soundtracks since the early 1960s. For example, Muscle Shoals Sound Studios in Sheffield, Alabama, opened in 1969, instantly started marking up the charts with number one hits by recording artists like the Rolling Stones, Willie Nelson, Wilson Pickett, Linda Ronstadt, Rod Stewart, and Paul Simon. Nashville's Big Backyard's ardent promoters include Mike Wolf, host of History Channel's American Pickers TV series, who provides a surgical contextual lens focused on Nashville's Big Backyard's diverse initiatives, and Liz McLaurin, president of the Land Trust for Tennessee, an equally passionate supporter of Nashville's Big Backyard's greater good elements through the Land Trust Preservation Initiatives. To learn more about the program, log on to nashvillesbigbackyard.org.
My name is Roseanne Cash. I listen to WNYC in New York. In fact, NPR is all I listen to. And if I didn't have NPR, I would feel like my lifeline to the world has been cut. So, yes, please support your local NPR station.